Hey everyone, welcome to the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. My name is Ben Wilson, and I'm going to be hosting Robin King and other guests for coffee once a week as we explore different topics of faith. Six Ways from Sunday is an online faith community exploring how we think, love, and act in the world. And it's part of a new project called Rising Spirit Ministry, which is a three-way partnership between this new online community and the Pinoki United Church and Basha United Church in Alberta, Canada. Robin is our minister at the Basha United Church and also Pinoki United Church, and he alternates back and forth between the two churches every Sunday. So how we do that is we live stream the full service at 10:30 a.m. Mountain Time each week. So if you'd ever like to join us for church, please do any Sunday. You can watch or listen from home or wherever you're at. And you can check out that live stream as well as archived services and sermon videos at risingspiritministry.com or by searching Rising Spirit Ministry on YouTube. So let's get into it. Today I've got Robin King joining me for coffee, and we are talking about what it means to be children of God. Robin's here today to talk to me about what he's going to talk about on Sunday coming up. And this week you're going to be in Pinoka, I believe, right? Yeah. Sunday coming up. So what's kind of rolling around in your head this week, Robin?
Oh, that's always a mystery, Ben. But for this Sunday, we like to follow the lectionary, and there are times that we kind of diverge from that, if it's really important. But I like the idea of the lectionary because it means we're kind of all talking about the same thing, and bringing our different perspectives, which actually is kind of what I'm going to try and talk about this Sunday. My belief is that we all come from God and we all return from God. My belief is that, and we can talk about that another time, I guess, but is that there is one God and there are many ways to that one God, and we each travel our own way. That's why there's so many religions, right? I mean, religion is just the framework that we put on what we believe. And because what we believe, our sense of faith, our understanding of that is so unique and individual, we have created different ways of structuring that, right? So that's the point of having different religions. It doesn't mean that there isn't still just one God. I was just reading a thing. I like Roger Woolsey. He wrote the Kissing Fish book. I was reading a thing he had posted this morning about. Now there's this thing going around where you've seen this coexist bumper sticker where each letter is a different symbol of a different religion.
Yeah, I've seen
that.
It's really cool.
Yeah, and this is somebody had posted a version of it that says they can't all be right. And he had a really interesting way of approaching that, and he says that it's kind of like it's a well, and it might be many wells, right? Religions, different religions, many wells, many ways of getting there, but essentially we're all accessing the same aquifer, right? We're all accessing the same water, right?
Yes,
so that on one level, it's very complicated and there's lots of different things. And then it eventually comes to a point where there's a uniformity, I guess.
Or a common
ground. That's the thing about unity and uniformity, right? Unity, to me, says we can all still be unique and individual, but we understand that there's some sort of commonality that unites us.
Right.
And that's why one of the things I love about the United Church is essentially the idea of that commonality is, first of all, that we are united in recognizing that there is something which is uniform, the same for all of us, which is that there is one God.
Yeah.
But we are also united in respecting the fact that we're all uniquely different and that we come to that God in different ways, right? So that respect of difference is a unifying factor. Right. So, to me, there is one God, but there are many ways of traveling to that God, and so we have these many different religions, and of course we use different language, right? In some traditions, how we name God is different, even for people who aren't religious. have a different kind of understanding of whether there's a supreme being or a power in the universe, or it's the fabric of creation that connects us, or if we call it love, right? Different ways of describing that. I'm going to call it God, and one of my ways to God is Jesus.
Yeah.
It's not my only way, but it's one of my ways to God, is Jesus. And right just there, I just actually felt some people's heads exploding, because we've always traditionally, we've always kind of tried so hard to establish that our way is the way. Right? We even have that language, the way. In fact, the first followers of Jesus, people of the way.
That's what they called themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Except even, see, I don't believe Jesus said he was the only way. I know we have that wonderful verse from John about Jesus saying, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Right? See, I think what Jesus meant was, I am the way, in that the way is true and it's life-giving. My label is Jesus, but that might not be everybody's. That doesn't mean it's not the way. The way to God is through love, and essentially the way I have showed you. Love each other the way I have showed you to love. That's the way to God.
So you think that's what Jesus meant?
I think that's what he meant. I don't think he literally meant I'm the only way. Having said that, you could certainly see why people would think that. Not just because it literally says that in the Gospel of John. But the Gospel of John's an interesting thing, because it's not the same as the other three Gospels. It's different. It's later. It's not simply a narrative. And those other three Gospels, general consensus is that Mark came first, and Matthew and Luke use pieces of Mark, but Mark also had another source, which we refer to as Q, so that they have essentially a unifying source, and it's a narrative. John tells the story, but there's so much more mystery. There's so much more mystery in the Gospel of John. So much more. It's so much more sort of metaphysical. It's so much more creative in his telling. Right?
It's written differently, but it's also written at a different time.
Yes, and it's later. And so John's Gospel appeared around the time that the first Christian communities, the first followers of Jesus. Because they weren't called Christians yet, right? The first followers of Jesus were now being persecuted not just by the Romans, but by the Jews, because they were different, right?
So their own people.
Yeah, the first followers of Jesus were Jews, and they still were good Jews. They went to synagogue on Saturday, and then the next day, the first day of the week, as it says in the Gospel stories, the first day of the week, they celebrate the resurrection and do their own thing, right? And there came a point, of course, at which the other Jews kind of went, not only do we not agree with you on that whole Jesus thing, but you have to go.
Yeah.
In fact, not only do you have to go, you're wrong about that. And so here's this community that's a little bit in crisis because they're being persecuted. They're also a little bit in crisis because they're expanding. At the same time that they're being persecuted, they're going different places. Like Paul is establishing churches in different places.
They're reaching out to people.
They're trying to figure out what their identity is.
Yeah.
And here comes this gospel. And this gospel is also the general consensus is, I think, that whoever wrote, created, however the Gospel of John came into being, those same people or person created the epistles of John, right? One of which we hear this Sunday, which I'll mention in a second. So John's gospel is really more about speaking to a people in crisis, not telling a narrative. It's about sharing that story with people who need their faith reinforced, who need to understand more about the power of what they believe in order to remind themselves that they are unique and special. And unfortunately, that can very quickly turn into I am and you are not.
Right.
Right? And so we go from we are all children of God to I'm just a little bit more child of God than you.
Right.
And, or you are not, I am, because I do this. And that's the thing one of the things we're hearing this Sunday is from the first epistle of John, we hear that phrase, children of God. And the way it's used, is to say, in order to be children of God, you must do this.
Like, it's prescriptive.
It, and to me, that creates an exclusivity, right? It creates the idea that only some people can be children of God. And there are, don't get me wrong, there are plenty of people who think that is absolutely the case. But we're not. See, I think from the very beginning of our existence, we are all children of God, all of us. It doesn't matter what color, culture, where we're from in the world, what age we are, what anything we are fundamentally all children of God.
So what would you say then, Robin, to the concept, which is pretty standard in most Christian churches, that we're actually born into sin, that we're not born perfect and clean and innocent, we're born in that sinful nature, and that we require that salvation?
Oh, Ben, that's a whole other conversation, podcast conversation, because we kind of don't have time for the whole thing now. But essentially, my take on that is no. Sorry, I realize I'm contradicting like 2,000 years of everything. But see, I cannot reconcile. First of all, I can't reconcile the idea that a newborn infant just come into the world is inherently sinful. I just can't. I'm sorry. Secondly, if we truly believe, and realizing, of course, that a lot of this is metaphorical and it's myth, and myth is not a bad thing, because myth is about the essential truth being more important than the story itself, right? If we are created in the image of God, how can we be created inherently sinful? I know what you're going to say, Adam and Eve. Right? But see, I don't see the Adam and Eve story as being about sin. I see it as about Adam and Eve claiming their free will.
Right.
And that's how we have free will, right? So from my perspective, we're created in the image of God, which means we are inherently good. We have to be, unless you're implying that God is not. And secondly, Adam and Eve choosing to essentially take their free will and go out into the world is not a sin. I know there's lots of, I'm sure there's lots of deep theology around all of that as to why I should, you know, not be saying that and everything, but I can't.
Yeah.
So this is why this needs to be, there's lots of reason, more stuff
it's,
there.
It's, but a much bigger,
it's a much
story
bigger
to
conversation.
Unpack, but it relates to this terminology that we're talking about. The
right.
Children
that's,
of God.
That's true. Fair enough. It does. Yes. And so because I believe we come from God and we return to God, we all belong to, whatever your language is around God, whatever your belief system that you created, remember religion is a system that we create to help us better understand. Hopefully, cynically, it's to control people, but it's to better understand what we believe, our own ideas of around faith. But however you describe God, I believe we all come from God and we all return to God, and because of that, we are all children of God. The language and the manner in which the Epistle of John uses that is around reinforcing the fact that we are a unique community. Remember, it's being written for people who need to be reminded there's something unique about you. You're a follower of Jesus, and your way to God is Jesus. You need to be, that needs to be reinforced. Your sense of faith needs to be reinforced. I say that trying to frame that positively. Cynically, in the back of my mind, it's me thinking the current leadership of the church in those days thought that they were losing people and they needed to reinforce for them what it meant to be. And that's actually, oddly enough, that's what makes these stories so relevant to us today, right? People are leaving the church in droves. People are abandoning religion. Let me say that differently. People are abandoning the religion that we created for them historically, right? People are trying to find their own way. People of faith are leaving churches in order that they may find their own way to God.
I like the way you put that.
Right?
It's not that they're saying faith isn't important to me or I don't believe in God.
But they just don't like this system, right?
Yeah.
And you see that actually. Let me say one of the places where I think I see that a lot is in rural communities, because if you are if you're a Presbyterian, for instance, and your closest Presbyterian church is 45 minutes drive away at least, and you live in a rural community, the odds are pretty good you're going to look in your own community to find a church where you feel like you could go, right? If you're Roman Catholic, you would be looking for, because you would be looking for a place where you felt like you belonged and that your faith was refreshed and reinforced and strengthened, right? Mm-hmm. And the label on the building might not be the label that you grew up with as your religion. I see more people thinking, I know I grew up being this denomination or this religion, but here is a place where I feel like I can belong in this community. And why is that? Well, because at the root of everything, we're all children of God. Yeah. If we acknowledge that our ways to God are all going to be different, if we can come to the understanding that we all journey a different path to God, then recognize that we're all children of God, then that's one of the ways in which we can create community around that. Our individual journeys might be different, but perhaps we can walk part of that journey together, right? It's always the language you use about around Jesus, right? Jesus walks with us. So why can't we walk with each other? Well, of course we can, right? And so rather than say to somebody, if you stop sinning, you would be a child of God. But because you're a sinner, you are not a child of God. You just opened the door on, well, what makes me a sinner? Well, when you do that, you mean you say that, right? It's your opinion, right? That's our, we're moving into the structure judgment of religion and the judgment that we have and all of that kind of stuff. And Jesus simply said, you're a witness to this. I'm alive. I'm alive. And we witness to that, not in seeing, look, Jesus is standing right there, Ben. He's right here, see? But saying, Jesus is alive in you and me. And how Jesus taught us to love by living that keeps Jesus alive.
Right when he presented himself to the disciples or showed himself to the disciples, he gave them...
Peace be with you.
And he explained that the Holy Spirit is how he was going to remain...
Right. Peace be with you.
Alive in
them. And God's peace to you. And then he breathes on them and imparts them the Holy Spirit. Right? And says, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. So... How do we interpret that? Like everybody interprets that differently, right?
Yeah.
Traditionally, religions haven't. Christianity has interpreted that to mean the Father has sent me in order that you might do this.
Go and convert everybody.
And be this way. Yes, go and convert everybody to behave this way. And see, I don't think that's what it's about. It's not about behavior. I mean, that's the thing. That's the point of love one another as I showed you by the way I lived. It's and those constant reminders that it's not about the word or the letter of the law, it's about what's at the heart of it. If what's in your heart is what you live, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about we're created in the image of God, right? At the heart of our self is God. If we go back to that, if we try and focus on that as our point of commonality, our unity, there are different paths to God, but at our heart, we're inherently good.
If all of those paths are rooted in love, and Christ is love...
Love is not a behavior, right?
Right, but...
So it's not about behavior. It's about something bigger, something, and yet deeper, right? It's about living love.
And if each of those different paths is rooted in living out that love, then maybe Jesus is the only way to God.
Well, there's where we...
Because he's love.
Right. Okay. Except there's where we get to that, the it's crunch time, right? What makes my system, my religion, okay? Are we willing to simply say any way to God is okay, and then say, okay, so my way to God is that you must believe this, and I oppress people and I abuse people and I put people down, but you know that's the only way to get them to come to God. And the thing about that is, and here's Children of God as language at work again. Laurie and I went to a play a couple of weeks ago that was just incredible, and it was called Children of God, and it was about residential schools and the experience of a young boy and his sister in a residential school, and how that has that how as an adult that now affects him, right? And it was called Children of God. You can't say that is, you just can't look at that and go, that's living as Jesus taught us to live. You just, I'm sorry, because it's not. To live as Jesus taught us to live is to live love. And that's the criteria right there. If it is hurting people, it's not love. If it's abusing people, if it's oppressing people, if it's exerting power over people, that's not love. Jesus was about loving people and loving the people who most needed it, not the people who were just fine, but the people who most needed it. Jesus was about power with people, not over people. Jesus was about holding up people who had fallen down, healing people who were broken, not breaking them even more. That's the criteria, surely, for what is a legitimate, oh, that's such terrible language, what is a true path to God, right? The true path, of which there are many, is a path that lives love and grace and compassion. And there is no single one path. There cannot be, because we are all different. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. And we live in different contexts, we live in different societies, we live in different cultures, we live whatever language you want to use. We are, of course, indeed becoming more a global community, and we're connecting with each other more. And hopefully that will turn into relationships rather than oppressing others. But we're all unique and individual, and so our own personal, unique and individual way to God, if it follows love and grace and compassion, that is the journey to God. And that could have all sorts of different language around it. It could name God differently. It could name the people who lead you on that journey or walk on that journey differently. My way is to say God, and I travel with Jesus. In the first, you can sure see how in the first days of the followers of Jesus, when Jesus was no longer personally present, the leaders of the community needed to come to find a way that that supported their followers and strengthened their belief and their faith and everything, Unfortunately, then we kind of move into that area of this is the language we use. And that language, this is a thing. In that day, that language might have been just fine. It might have worked just fine. And people might have understood exactly what they meant. But today, maybe not. Maybe we understand that language differently. Maybe we understand the word witness differently. Maybe we understand... Think of all the churchy words that we use that we actually understand differently from the original meaning. Evangelism, stewardship is another one, right? Mm-hmm. We've come to understand them differently than the original intent. Can you go back and reclaim those words? I don't know. But some people think you can. Some people think you can't, and we need new language. So maybe we need new language. Maybe we need our language to evolve and grow. I mean, hey, our religion involves, oh, it doesn't, does it? But that's the thing. If religion is a structure that we put on our faith and our beliefs in order to better understand them, then surely it has to evolve also, mm-hmm. right? Because it's our structure.
If we're part of creating it, then why can't it grow as we do?
Yeah, the part that doesn't, change. I don't want to say doesn't grow, because of course it does, but doesn't change is at the heart of that is God, love, compassion, grace. Those eternal truths, if you like. And that's the thing about the Bible. No matter how you tell the story, if at the heart of that story is a truth, something that is true, that's the message that we want to get to. That's the piece that we want people to understand. That's the piece that we want to share. That's the piece that we want to witness to.
Well, thanks for exploring this a little bit with me today, Robin, and I'm really looking forward to diving more into that story and that conversation on Sunday.
Thanks for the coffee, Ben. I think we've come up with a few things too, and just in this conversation that we maybe want to explore further in other conversations.
So definitely.
That's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, looking forward to the next time. Thanks. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you'd like to hear more from Robin, you can check out his blog at risingspiritministry.com and just click on blog, or check out some of the Sunday morning sermons that are all archived on the website as well. You can also get plugged into the Six Ways from Sunday community at sixwaysfromsunday.ca, where you can find activities and faith in action resources for families and faith communities, as well as inspiring videos and blogs about living a life full of meaning, acceptance, peace, and well-being. Lastly, we'd love to hear from you, so if you have any thoughts on today's show or ideas for future episodes, please get in touch. You can find us on Facebook at Six Ways from Sunday, or through the website, again, sixwaysfromsunday.ca. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you matter, and you are loved. So spread joy and be the love. Take care.